Hi, I'm Clemmy Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. This week's episode is an excellent one, but it's not without its uncomfortable moments, as my guest, Alex Holder, and I try to have an open conversation about money, something that is still taboo and often hard to navigate. The only way we can break down barriers is by addressing it head-on, which is what Honestly Podcast is all about. None of this would have happened if it weren't for our sponsors, the brilliant and fittingly affordable F&F Clothing. These guys deserve a special thank you. Now let's talk dosh. Hi, welcome to Honestly Podcast. I'm Clemmy Telford. I'm here to do one of my favourite things. No, not lusting over ridiculously expensive candles, having a properly frank, open chat about tricky, sticky and often not spoken about subjects. Today we, and by we, I mean I, will be chatting to one of Business Insider's most creative women. She works and writes for the BBC, Warner Music, Elle and The Guardian, and, as if that wasn't already enough, she's recently become an author. She is Alex Holder, who, like me, recently ran away from a career in advertising in search of other creative kicks. Her first book, Open Up, The Power of Talking About Money, is all about destigmatising the way we talk, think and feel about money. Hi, Alex. How are you?
Hi, Clemmy. I am a little bit nervous about talking about money.
I'm nervous about talking about money too.
Despite having written a book about why we need to talk about money.
It's one thing writing it in a book and another thing having it come out of your mouth, I suppose. So we're going to start with a quick fire round. As the title of the podcast suggests, it's all about being honest. So to get you in the headspace, I'm going to ask you some quick questions. Are you ready?
I am ready.
They're not scary, I don't think. Okay, a great meal or great sex?
Great sex.
Fame or fortune?
Fame.
Leave or remain?
Remain.
Yep. Reincarnation, probable or not a chance?
Probable.
Social media, good or bad?
Bad.
Have you ever committed a crime?
Yes.
Do you believe in God?
No.
This comes from my own experience and a conversation I've had with my husband. Do you ever pee in swimming pools?
No.
When did you last cry?
This morning.
Oh. When did you last have sex?
7 days ago.
Worst habit?
Talking about money.
And seeing as we're going to be talking about money some more, what was your salary last year?
I earned 40,000 PAYE and my business, which I do like brand consultancy and writing, earned 77.
Exact, I like it. Now onto the section called Big Topic. As some people may know, I've been in an array of different financial situations, from Ben, my husband, filing for insolvency to later briefly landing a six-figure salary job. What I observed in myself, as I told you for your book, Alex, is that I felt ashamed and embarrassed about both, which is mad. For me, money is very much a taboo subject. I don't think I'm alone in feeling that way. Is that something you observed commonly and why?
I think we attach a lot of our worth to salary. So we think, and I don't think this is true, but we think it denotes our kind of status, our popularity, our intelligence, our place in society. And I guess because it's an exact number, you can quite literally place people in a pecking order if you wanted to and if you thought it was the most valuable currency. So I think because of that, it's become a taboo subject. And then on top of that, I feel like rich people dictated how we should talk about money. And that was when they had lots of it, so they didn't need to talk about money. And that kind of trickled down because if you have less money, you almost need to talk about it out of kind of survival. Mm-hmm. Like, where are the cheap places to live?
We'll get onto some of the stuff you talked about. But earlier I asked you how you were, and I meant emotionally, but how are you financially? And do you think the two are linked?
They are definitely linked. Research shows they're linked. If you ask someone how they are and they are doing well financially, they will often say they're doing well overall. I am right now in, doing how I feel like I'm doing exceptionally well financially. I went freelance 2 years and I feel really, really lucky that I'm making it work.
Thank you for being honest. Tell us more about Open Up and what inspired it.
So Open Up, The Power of Talking About Money, is a book that quite literally looks at what would happen if we all spoke about money a little bit more honestly. It started because I guess I just started to look at my conversations with friends and realised how inauthentic a lot of those conversations were because we skirted around the money bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a moment where I wanted to quit my job. It was a very good job in an advertising agency paying a very decent salary. And I suddenly realised I didn't want to do it anymore because I hadn't seen my son awake in 4 days. Mm-hmm. I think he was 11 months at the time. And I realised that to make that decision, I wanted to chat to my friends because they're the people I go to when I need advice and help. Yeah. But for those conversations to elicit any real advice, I had to talk about figures. I had to say, this is what I'm earning. This is how much my mortgage is. This is my childcare. This is what I may or may not earn in the future. I had no idea I wanted to do a career change. I didn't know if I could make that work. Mm-hmm. This is the risk. And I was the breadwinner and I'd just come back after maternity leave, hadn't earned for a few months. And kind of laying out the meat of my money to them, I realised that it was actually more liberating than scary or shallow. And we just discussed it. And there was no judgment there. They weren't going, oh, well, you earn a bit more than me. So, you're not allowed to be stressed about it. They understood that.
Did they come forward and share their own finances though? Or did you leave it feeling like you'd opened up and other people hadn't?
Through the process of talking about money, as I've been doing a lot this last year in writing the book, there's definitely been moments when other people haven't wanted to kind of reciprocate. But with my close friends, I feel like it just opened up a whole new area that we could talk about and do. And so now we'll go to each other with, a friend recently wanted to move in with a boyfriend after that she'd only been with for 6 months to save on rent. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real modern dilemma. Yeah. But to almost discuss that and to actually really work out the pros and cons, again, you have to talk figures. This is how much I'm going to save. Yeah. Is it worth it? This is the stress it might cause to the relationship so early. So yeah, I feel like almost by making money something that we do talk about, we don't talk about it all the time. We just don't avoid it.
No. But did you find it easier to have those conversations with your friends and with your family? Did you have them with your family?
Oh, I have them with some of my family. My family's kind of mostly, we're Northern. We definitely didn't grow up poor, but I don't feel like I came from money. My parents were teachers. I have two brothers and a sister, went to state school up north. And I kind of realised that I knew more about, say, a celebrity's wealth, what they were worth, and I didn't know my sister's salary.
Mm.
And, we plan things together. When you're planning a family holiday, it kind of helps to know what everyone's reality is and what their budget is and what they want to spend on that. So, yeah, we do talk about money with my family now too.
And do you think you've learned certain habits from your family in terms of money? Or
yes.
Do you think we all do? I can only assume that we all do.
We definitely all learn habits from our family. Mainly, one, because we don't talk about money as we kind of become adults and go into life. So often what's modelled from the people directly around us, we kind of pick up their habits. And I think we all have a way of spending and earning that we think is normal.
Mm-hmm.
But really, we probably got that from our mum and dad or caregivers when we were younger.
I've been looking at my own habits. And again, it's learned in that I will happily spend quite a lot of money on food. That doesn't bother me at all. Mm. I feel very comfortable with handing over my card for that. But anytime I buy clothes or anything that is I conceive as luxury, I feel a terrible guilt around it. But yeah, food doesn't sit within that because we were always, whatever we did for us, the currency was going out for nice meals together.
It's strange because and especially now that I'm doing a lot of analysing my spending a bit because I'm talking about it more, I realise that I will hand over money for alcohol very easily. Emotionally, paying for a round of drinks in a pub is, I find, easy. But paying £10 to get into an exhibition really riles me. And also hotels, I find really, I guess I just kind of in my head think accommodation should be free. It shouldn't be
really
free at
all.
You. But there's something about, I find paying for a bed to sleep in, really hard.
Interestingly, I went to a gig last night to see my brother play, Charlie Cunningham. He's great. And it was really hot and there was a cloakroom, but I wouldn't pay £2 to put my coat in the cloakroom.
Would you see? I started to look at things like that and go, okay, actually, the pleasure I'll get from being able to watch a gig without my coat is probably greater than than buying a drink at the bar.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes.
Difficult though, isn't it? When researching your book, you spoke to people in all manner of financial situations, didn't you? Could you give us some examples of the breadth?
Okay, so I spoke to one person who is, I mean, you know, millionaire, exceptionally rich. And I guess their biggest worry, obviously, isn't money, but is about how their kids will respond to growing up in an environment mm-hmm. where anything goes. And no matter what they do, they will be bailed out. And I think that was a very real stress for them. And then I spoke to quite a few people who earn around the kind of 300,000 a year salary and probably have stakes in a company. So, you know, at some point will get a massive bonus mm-hmm. like handout in their life. And then I spoke to lots of people on exceptionally good salaries, you know, in the kind of 100 grand range. Amazingly, none of them think they're rich or are doing well in any way, because often they're surrounded by, or they're kind of, they're working into someone who is earning the 300 or the 500K a year. And I think how people see their salary is often directly in relation to the people around them and what they're earning. Mm-hmm. And then I spoke to lots of people again on, you know, going down incrementally by kind of 10 grand, then down. Lots of people who are on like, you know, 50K, which is the salary that people say is when you don't get any happier when you go above that. And actually, from chatting to people, I would agree with that.
Really?
Yeah. All that happens when you get more money is you want more.
And spend more.
And you spend more. And there is never a point of enough. And then I spoke to lots of people on the average British salary, which is 28,000 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And then people on the living wage, people on the minimum wage, and then going down to benefits, people just out of prison, getting back on their feet. So yeah, like a wide, wide range.
Do you think there's an optimum wealth?
So I don't, like I said, more money does not correlate with greater happiness, but less money, I could see that lives were harder when you are living on a minimum wage, much harder. And I do think a bit more money would actually improve their happiness.
I was talking to my husband about it last night. And as I said, we've been in dire financial straits before and having bailiffs on the door, et cetera, et cetera. It's really grim and it does something to the core of your soul. And the thing about money, unlike any of the other subjects I'm talking about, it can actually preoccupy your entire day because you need money to get food. You need money to get to work. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a bit of a constant, isn't it? If you haven't got it can eat away with it. And it's that, as you say, because people don't talk about it.
Well, money is quite literally the greatest cause of anxiety in British adults. Even like just a little stress every single day is a mental health problem. Some of the things that the Living Wage Foundation does is that they look into what you need to kind of operate fully in society, to really take part in society.
Yeah.
And that isn't just a roof over your head and food and a bed. It's kind of personal grooming items or a mobile phone, because actually you can't.
Yeah, if you don't have the internet.
Yeah, if you don't have the internet, you can't truly integrate into society today. And they, you know, through their work, they work out that actually the minimum wage doesn't buy that, but if you pay people an extra little bit more, you can. Yeah, it's not about survival, is it? It's about living and thriving. And then it's attached to so many emotions.
I've got a fact that makes my palms sweat. The money charity website claims that the average adult has 30K of debt hanging over them. Can you speculate about what may be the cause of this debt culture?
Very easy credit. I mean, I've been sent credit cards in the post before that just a sticker going, peel me off and go and use me. And, you know, credit cards I haven't applied for. And I was in a position where I didn't need to use that credit card. But if I had have been, I would have used it.
Yeah.
Credit companies want to lend people money and are. And then we're just in a society where we're just bombarded with stuff that we supposedly need. I think most people, if they would look at their spending, would realise that they are spending at least twice a day. They're probably spending money on something, if not 10 times a day. We walk past shops all the time.
City living as well. I again have called myself out, probably when we were skint, that this norm of in order to go for a walk, you buy a coffee in London.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you told me that when I was living back in the country, what a bonkers state of affairs. I'm going to drop £3 to walk around a field.
Totally. Like even just to step away from your desk at work.
Yeah.
It's often to go and spend money, which is, you know, the vending machine or...
Yeah, it's habitual, isn't it? And not being brave enough to opt out of that, you know, meeting friends to go for a walk and saying, oh, actually, I don't want a coffee.
So, and I notice like strange things. Like I'll feel embarrassed if I'm in a restaurant and I don't really want to eat that much.
No. It's all to do with fear of judgment, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much judgment about money.
Now, I could stick a terrible pun in here about how money makes the world go round, but I'm going to resist the urge and instead want to talk to you about how we all need to start focusing on what we need to do to help the environment and save the planet. For example, F&F Clothing are proving that affordable fashion doesn't have to cost the earth. You may not realise it, but behind the scenes, they are firmly focused on producing clothing that is as sustainable as it can be. Plus, their take-back scheme means you can bring any of your unwanted clothes to one of 87 Tesco stores to give them a second life. Pretty amazing for a supermarket brand. But you recently told me about the arrangement you and your partner have on your birthday. can you explain your setup?
It sounds so weird, but we give each other cash for our birthdays. Considering we split most costs, sounds, I guess it just means go and spend some money, go and buy yourself a jumper, and you don't have to feel guilty in any way. And we even do it for Mother's Day and Father's Day. But that's the other thing, with like couples' money.
Yeah, I was going to ask you relationships, it's really interesting.
What works for you is the right thing to do. And that works for us. I'm not saying everyone should be giving each other cash gifts, but it kind of works.
And have you got under the skin of the impact of money on relationships?
I find it quite fascinating that with friendships, it's very much a kind of you split everything equally quite often. It's, you know, you split Ubers or you share a cheese board or you buy rounds in kind of, you know, sequentially. But in a relationship, it's meant to just be what's mine is yours.
Mm.
And it's meant to be that from the start, it's kind of going forward. And I've realised that attitudes towards money, so it's whether, you know, putting a saver with someone who just kind of literally lives paycheck to paycheck and spends all their money, that is like a harder dynamic to make work. And then other things I found, I interviewed a couple of people that had been with, so someone who was very, very rich, you know, earning a decent, let's say like 80 grand salary upwards, and then someone who wasn't earning that was probably earning average, bit less, coming together and then realising that the person who was earning less almost getting frustrated that the person that earned more could do whatever they want. They could buy a car that weekend. They could fly to LA the next week if they wanted to. Mm. And that kind of, it was almost like the inequality and the freedom that they both had. They just couldn't make work. Like in writing this book, it sounds like I'm obsessed with money, but I'm actually just saying it's just a thing.
Yeah.
And if we spoke about it, maybe it would become less of a thing than it is right now. And I think if you end up in a relationship with someone who has a similar attitude, comes from similar money, earns the same amount, money is going to be less of a thing. I have found with my boyfriend though that we chat about money quite a lot. We're both freelancers, so our kind of earnings go up and down. And the way, rather than having a joint account, which is one way of almost speaking about money with through, you know, that you could see each other's expenditure, we probably at least every 2 weeks
check in.
This is what I'm earning. This is what I've earned this week. This is what's coming out. If we never talk about it, you might just presume that everybody's working off the same budget as you. And that probably isn't the case.
No.
I think there's a stat that 2 out of every 5 people are spending, FOMO spending, they call it. So spending to keep up with friends. So that's like, you know, a group of friends is 5. So that's nearly half a group of friends are getting in debt to go for dinner.
But probably you're all doing it to each other, right?
I've really found if someone says, oh, I'm skint at the moment, or I'm saving for a laptop, or actually I want to go, you know, I'm saving up to go on holiday, or just I've not got any work coming in right now, I don't have any money. As a friendship group, we're all much more, I think people fear such judgment saying that. But actually we all just go, oh, okay then, well, do you want to just come round and we'll have a bottle of wine here?
And actually then probably everyone feels a bit relieved, don't they?
It's a genuine like group sigh of relief.
Yeah.
I can feel it.
Because there's that weird thing I think we talked about, you, if you follow a kind of classic go to school, go to uni, everyone's levelling within reason. And then within a couple of years of people going into their careers, and maybe we all started on similar salaries, and suddenly you don't talk about it anymore. Like when we landed our first jobs, I knew what all my best mates' salaries were because we were out there in the marketplace together. And then, bit by bit, you're like,
one of you earns more.
Yeah, and the
one
people.
Less.
Yeah, I'm going to really try and have more open conversations, but it's difficult.
I don't know how we'd all function if we just spoke about money. I know that I do it with my friends and our friendships are, I feel like they've thrived since we all know each other's financial situations, mainly because actually it means that we talk about, say, jobs and work and relationships in a deeper sense because we're just not missing out on the money bit. But I do know at the moment that we're often judging each other for how we're spending. We often feel shame whether we earn a lot or shame whether we earn very little. And they're not helpful emotions. Brené Brown, the amazing American shame researcher, she says that shame derives its power from being unspeakable.
Mm. Any kind of practical tips about how we get more comfortable and confident about money? I think you said just opening up the conversation.
I think we could all be a lot less judgmental. I think it's really, really easy to judge a friend for how they're spending. And often when I tell people I'm writing this book, they go, oh, I hate it at the end of a meal when someone doesn't want to split the bill equally. And I think if someone doesn't want to split the bill equally, it's probably because they feel differently about money than you, or they can't. So kind of like cut people a bit of slack. Mm-hmm. I think we have a culture where we encourage each other to spend money a lot. You know, that whole, that top looks great on you, buy it. Mm. So if we can all stop doing that, actually kind of a bit more accountable. I think sit with that first initial bit of uncomfortableness when money comes up, because honestly, once you get past that, it's such a liberating feeling. And you, all, say if you don't talk to your colleagues about what you earn, all you're ultimately doing is protecting your boss and the company you work for. Mm. Try and have an honest conversation with yourself. Look at your spending. Do a bit of self-analysis of why am I doing that? Like you were saying, we can't leave your desk without going to buy a coffee or go for a walk. Like, is that something that you could change? Or do you feel really anxious when you're spending money, and why is that?
When I was working in advertising, I hadn't been provided with the tools of learning to be comfortable with talking about money. And because no one was talking about it and I wasn't talking to colleagues, I found myself in a situation where I was vastly underpaid for the job that I was doing. And the only way I discovered that is because I had dinner with some peers and they asked me outright what I was being paid. And then they told me what I should have been being paid. And by that conversation, you know, it was fundamental. I learned about the gap. And if I had never had that conversation, I would have continued to have been paid.
I had a very similar thing. In an advertising agency I worked in, there was a notepad left in a meeting room that detailed, like, I think it was like 6 or 7 people's salaries and their salary increases. It's what they were on and what they were about to be
paid on.
And it was photographed, and then it was sent around the agency from like person to person as it, because, you know, it's gold dust information.
Yeah.
And based on that bit of paper, I asked for a pay rise and got it. Also with negotiating salaries, if you're scared, like, you can do it over email if it really, really scares you. And the other thing, that's why you should talk to your friends about money, because if the only time you ever talk about money is in a pay review, how are you going to advocate for yourself if you've never had a conversation already? You know, talking about money makes you nervous, plus the kind of high stakes
and it becomes a thing of habit. Now I'm freelance, and I'm sure you feel the same. I often have to say, is there a budget for that? Or how much can you afford for this? And once you've done it in 3 emails, it just isn't even a thing. It's just like, this is a piece of business. But I literally was never taught the language around that, about how to do it. Which brings me on to my last question, actually.
Okay.
What do you hope to instill in your boy, Cass, about money, and what would you like him to learn?
I'd like him to realise that it's not the only currency in life. So often when people get a pay rise or go for a really high-paid job, they're handing over their time, their stress. You know, they don't leave a lot of room for their family, their friends, their like other passions in life. And I'd like him to know that money, yeah, it can buy freedom, it can buy lots of lovely things, but also the pursuit of it kind of rules out a lot of other things in life.
Yes.
So I'd like him to value it.
One of my boys recently asked me if we were rich.
What did you say?
I said we are rich in some ways, because we're happy and we're comfortable and we're healthy, as far as we all know. And that makes, you know, but yeah, it's amazing when your child asks you that you recoil. So you've got to check yourself. Anyway, I wanted to get inside the metaphorical wallets of more people. So I asked the good folk of Instagram to complete the following sentence. How would you describe your finances? And these are some of their answers. Not at all where I imagined I'd be at age 40. A constant source of worry. Tragic. Stable month by month, but with no leeway. Afloat, just. Fucked. Still in debt from uni and then from maternity leave. As I earn more, I spend more. Crippled by childcare. Hand to mouth. Chaotic. In denial. On a knife edge. Working long hours for shit pay and no pensions. Drowning in debt, and we are one paycheck away from homelessness. It's fairly bleak answers, isn't it?
Yeah. The honesty is quite amazing, though.
Yeah. But interestingly, although those answers were, for me, a little bit depressing, I then asked them whether they considered themselves richer or poorer than average. And most of them said richer. So it felt like a bit of a contradiction. And also this kind of, I think, British underdog mentality that even if we do feel like our back's against the wall, there is this kind of fighting sense of optimism and spirit, which I loved.
That's an interesting question, that do they feel richer or not? Because I asked people, what did they consider rich? And generally, it was always double what they earned.
Really? So it's almost an unattainable...
Well, it's like if someone earned £8 an hour, they were like, oh, if I earned £16 an hour, I'd be really rich. And then when I spoke to someone who, you know, was on like 300 grand, they were like, oh, if I was earning £500,000 a year, that'd be really rich.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
I also asked people to share their salaries with me, which they did, and it was a real mix. And then I asked them if they found that process uncomfortable, and only 39% of them said that they found sharing their salary uncomfortable, which actually surprised me. And I think actually that was because it was online, you know. If I'd have asked them as people on the street, they definitely would have found it more uncomfortable, I can only assume. But it's a fear of judgment, isn't it? So this is a bit before the end. Two more things. First of all, it's polite to ask you if there's anything you want to promote or shout about.
My book, go and buy it, Open Up, The Power of Talking About Money.
Available from all good retailers and Amazon.
All good retailers and Amazon.
And last but not least, who do you wish you could have an honest conversation with, and what would you say? It could be a celeb, a friend, someone who's died, or a younger version of yourself.
Oh, I'd love to go and tell the younger version of myself to stop being a dick with money.
Well,
she didn't respect it.
She didn't know, did she?
No, she had no idea. I also, at 24, landed a decent job in advertising, and it was...
But there's so much, isn't that? I always think with all my things that I could regret when I was young, that is what being young is about. It's about making the mistakes and learning from them. Thank you.
Thank you, Clemmy.
I've been Clemmy Telford, and she's been Alex Holder, and this has been Honestly. Time to bid farewell with one final shout out to F&F Clothing for making today's awkward but important chats happen. As Alex and I discussed, there's a lot of work to do around making us better versed in the language of finance, but hopefully this podcast is a small step in the right direction. So thank you, F&F Clothing at Tesco's, and to Alex, and to you lovely lot for listening. We've hit that part, the shameless plug, but at least I'm being honest, right? That's the name of the game. So please do share your thoughts and reviews, tell your mates all about it, and better still, why not to press the big subscribe button? That way you'll get weekly doses of unadulterated honesty from me, Clemmy Telford. Thanks very much.